When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the GM Shuffle.
This contract shocked me. I didn't see this one coming. They're going to need somebody to be dynamic. I just didn't see it. This was one of the deals to me that has the potential for the highest risk of failure.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to the GM Shuffle podcast with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your new host, Femi Abebefe. We're here ready to rock here with Michael. Michael, this is a relaunch here of the GM Shuffle. It's been a while that we've talked, so let's get this thing underway, man.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to it. You know, this is the third generation of the GM Shuffle. We started out with the great Tate Frazier on GM Street, and certainly he did a wonderful job. And then we transitioned to the Shuffle in true honor of the great Bruce Springsteen. And Adnan came aboard, who did a remarkable job, a yeoman's position every single day. Joe DiMaggio hitting streak unlike any other. And I sincerely want to thank both, and especially Adnan, who I felt like when I listened to Springsteen's great transformation of his lyrics of Blood Brothers, I think of what Adnan and I were able to do over 3 years, and with so many friends around in the early evening light and the miles we've come and the battles we've won and lost and the roads we've traveled, I truly appreciate him. So you've got big shoes to fill, but I know you can do it because we've already covered ground that you are not a Mitchell Trubisky fan.
Yes.
And you'll uphold the great tradition.
Yeah, 200-plus episodes for you and Adnan together here over the 3 years, like you mentioned. So big shoes to fill as Adnan has left me with the duty of carrying on this GM Shuffle legacy. And for those who don't know me, I am a host over at VSiN, the sports betting network. Michael and I work together there. I've been there since August of 2021. My media background is that I was a local sports anchor over in Seattle. That was my most recent job before joining VSiN here. So before I was a sports bettor, before I was a local anchor in local news there, I was a football fan. And that's why we're doing this podcast together. We're both lovers of the game. So let's get this underway. For the folks who are just tuning in, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Also, tweet at us because we like to hear from you guys all throughout our time together here throughout the offseason. We'll be doing podcasts every Thursday. So at MLombardiNFL on Twitter, at Femi Abebefe is where you can find me. Hopefully you guys can chime in on the conversation. We love to hear from you guys. It's been a crazy NFL offseason. We're going to recap all the moving, all the shaking that's been going on, the quarterbacks, the receivers, the pass rushers. But last night, Michael, we get the breaking news. Bruce Arians stepping down as Buccaneers head coach. He is retiring and moving over to a front office role here. This news just came down last night, first reported by Peter King. Arians will now join the Bucs front office as a senior football consultant. When you first heard this news, I mean, what was your reaction? I was shocked.
Well, I was shocked, too, in the sense that why now? You know, and I wrote about this today for VSiN.com. If you want to read my column, go to VSiN.com. It'll be up there sometime later today. But I wrote about, like, why now? Like, most times coaches, you know, they feel like, okay, after the season, I'm exhausted. I need change. You know, we've seen one other coaching change that happened at an owner's meeting. It happened in 1994 when Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones got in their scuffle with your Dallas Cowboys fam.
Yes, unfortunately.
You know, and that resulted in the Barry Switzer era taking over for the Cowboys, and Jimmy went away. But this one shocked me only on the sense of the timing. I mean, Bruce was at the combine talking about Brady's not coming back and was extolling the virtues of Blaine Gabbert. You know, mm-hmm. And so now at the owners' meeting, he wasn't in the team coach's picture. He left early. Like, it just doesn't make sense why. And it's going to add to a bunch of conspiracy theories, which, you know, I love conspiracy theories.
Yes, let's talk about
being the candidate. But I just don't think Brady was on the sixth floor of the depository waiting for Bruce to turn around on Elm Street to come down and be in a triangular configuration. I think that's a lot of nonsense. I just think Bruce probably felt like it was time to play more golf, if that's even possible.
Well, and that's interesting, though, because a lot of people are going to make those connections, Michael, and I instantly made those connections when I saw the news last night just because of that timing with Tom Brady now coming back. I mean, that was a 40-day retirement for Brady, and we'll get into the Bucks and Brady's coming back also later on as well. But as it pertains to this Arians news, it's just interesting to see him come back and then Bruce leave. Now, it was reported from Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times that Brady was informed that Arians was going to be stepping down either the day that he decided to unretire or the day after. So the team is saying that Brady had no part in this decision or anything like of that matter. But people are going to make these connections because there was some reported friction between the two here. But it's Bruce Arians. He has frictions with all his players.
Yeah, and I think that's true, but I think this. Look, I believe that to be true, that Brady knew he was going to. This has been in the works for a while, right? So, but and they're certainly going to have friction. As I wrote about today, I mean, you basically have two guys that were brought up in different systems, you know, and they come from different backgrounds in terms of how to move the ball offensively, how to win the game. And there are always going to be. But I think what you got to give Bruce a little credit for is during the first year, when they were struggling, you know, they moved away from Bruce's offense and into the Patriot offense. Bruce never admitted it, but it was on the tape. You could see it. It was clear. Brady was getting his way. And I don't think Bruce became a nuisance or a problem for what they wanted to do offensively. He wasn't calling plays. I mean, look, when we saw him on the sidelines, he looked like they would never let him in a bank in that outfit. Like, he looked like he had a bomb attached to him, you know, like walking down the street, you'd be scared to see him. So, like, he watched the game like you and I did, Femi. Like, he really wasn't doing anything to contribute. He didn't mess with the defense. He wasn't involved with the kicking game. And frankly, as bettors, we all know his game management left a lot to be decided. 45 seconds left to go in the Rams game. Mm-hmm. He did nothing to help him win that. So, like, I don't think it's going to be a huge loss. The betting market didn't either. It didn't adjust the line at all on the Bucks. So, I mean, Bruce, obviously, he's got a Super Bowl, had a great coaching career coming from Temple to winning a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. Remarkable. But I don't think this moves the needle at all. I think the key is Brady being under center.
Yeah, the Buccaneers are still 7-1 to win the Super Bowl over at DraftKings, our show sponsor just behind the Buffalo Bills. You mentioned the timing of it. It's so confusing because if Bruce Arians knew he wanted to step away and maybe he felt that this was the way that he can influence who his successor was, because I got to give Arians credit for that. He said that a big part of this decision was putting Todd Bowles in a great position to become the head coach, and Bruce Arians has been very on the forefront of uplifting and hiring minorities, hiring women, having them be a part of his coaching staff. And I mean, how often do you see a late 60s white guy with two black coordinators? That's what Arians had over the last few years here. The fact that he decided that now was the time and not maybe after the 2022 season, because he said it in his statement that he probably was going to retire after the season regardless. The fact that they decided to do it now, maybe he felt that he could only have influence if they made that decision now versus at the end of this upcoming regular season.
You know, I kind of felt, fam, that I thought that he, you know, that the Bucs should have made Todd the head coach in waiting and allowed him to not interview for any of these head coaching jobs. I'm a big Todd Bowles guy. Look, I know his record at the Jets was a disaster, but you become a head coach with Mike McKagan as your general manager. See how that works out for you. I mean, Belichick wouldn't have been able to survive that either. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. And Todd never could get the offense fixed. He could never really get the right quarterback. They made disastrous moves. Remember, I mean, this guy felt like Hackenberger could be a starter, drafted him in the second round. I mean, this tells you
Christian
the level.
Hackenberger?
Yeah. I mean, this this tells you the level of what he saw pro football as. So, like, to me, I think Bowles gets kind of lumped into a bad Jet era. He needed help, there's no doubt. He'll be a better head coach this time than he was the last time. What's fascinating about Bowles is people don't know this. Parcells was the reason why that Todd Bowles became a coach. When Parcells was coaching the Giants, he stood on the sideline and he watched this young kid from Temple play and start at free safety, a free agent, not drafted, play free safety for the Bucks, for the Washington football team, they called the Redskins then. And Richie Pettibone was the defense coordinator of Washington. And that defense that Pettibone ran was very complex. In fact, his signals were complex. I mean, you couldn't really get a read on what he was doing. Everything was predicated on matches. And you had to have really smart linebackers and really smart safeties. And Bowles mastered it quickly. Parcells saw that and said, no, I got to hire this guy one day as a coach. He did. He developed him and nurtured him as a coach. Obviously, he became his own man. But I think that relationship fosters a unification between Brady and Bowles that'll be stronger than anything you had with Arians. I think they both will see the game in how three elements, how complementary football will go towards winning. I think it's a great move for the Bucks. I really do.
Yeah, you mentioned Todd Bowles with the Jets, 24-40, but he was fighting an uphill battle there with Mike Maccagnan as general manager. Went 10-6 in 2015 in his first year with the Jets, so that's really impressive. Bowles, he gets a five-year contract. It's a head coaching contract to be the permanent head coach. Now, my question to you is that, like, why not Leftwich? Because we heard Todd Bowles, his name, he was brought up in head coaching searches. Byron Leftwich was brought up in head coaching searches. I thought he was going to go to Jacksonville there. And it appears that Brady and Leftwich have a really good relationship on the offensive side of the ball. Why Bowles over Leftwich?
I think Bowles is going to, you're going to benefit from those 64 games he coached at the New York Jets. I think if you're the Glazer family, I don't see Bowles as a retread. I see Bowles much like a guy who learned from his mistakes, and he's going to take a giant step forward. Plus, I think he has tremendous command over that entire organization and the respect of most of every player. Today it comes out that Sue wants to now sign back. They need to get Sue and Jason Pierre-Paul back. There's no doubt. I think if you met Todd Bowles, he's a very quiet guy, but he doesn't mind confrontation. I think he's demanding. I think it's the right hire. I really do. I think he's going to be a very good head coach. And with having Leftwich just focusing on the offense with Clyde Christensen, I think it'll help Bowles because he doesn't have to worry about the offense. That was his biggest problem at the Jets. He went through offensive coordinators way too much, didn't have a quarterback. I think that's going to get solved. I think Bowles, you know, people look at it as all, you know, he's a retread. I don't see it. I think sometimes smart coaches that learn from their mistakes, whether it's Pete Carroll, whether it's anyone, Belichick, who have a second opportunity, Marv Levy, who have a second opportunity, I think they become better coaches.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. This NFL offseason has been absolutely crazy. In late January, after Brady retired, who would have thought that Brady would be back and Arians would be the one who was stepping away, retiring? Welcome to the NFL offseason in 2022, and we're going to recap all the happenings, the QB shuffle, the wide receiver exchange, and the teams under pressure to get edge rushers here. But we're going to take a quick break, but don't go away because we got a lot to get to recap this NFL offseason. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21-plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, so Michael, the offseason in the 2022 NFL season, it started with the two-time reigning MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers. It was, is he going to retire? Is he going to return to the Packers? Is he going to request a trade like we saw the contentious offseason last season for Green Bay here? But lo and behold, Rodgers re-signs with the Green Bay Packers. Get this, a three-year extension worth $150 million. And this solidifies Green Bay as a contender until Rodgers declines, whenever that will be. But you were kind of early on in the offseason thinking that this was just a lot to do about nothing. Why do you think we saw this fuss about Aaron Rodgers possibly leaving Green Bay or maybe even retiring?
You know, I think, Femi, when you really go back and look at the offseason, and we'll do this all through the pod, but I think when you look at it as of the point, I'm reminded of a scene in The Sopranos when Johnny Sack's sitting there trying to get some resolution because somebody made fun of his wife, saying she had a 50-pound mole removed from her ass, and he wanted retribution. He wanted Ralphie killed, you know? And so they're having this sit-down on this telephone, and as they're going through it, Johnny, they talk about how much money Ralphie makes for the family. And the line that Sack utters is the perfect line for the offseason. He says, again with the money. And that's the offseason. It's again with the money. It's all about the money. We really lose sight of, and we can't as a betting network, you can't, I can't, as we give out advice, we lose sight of how all the other stuff has really little to do with it. It really comes down to money. And Rodgers can say it doesn't, and I get that. And he was certainly entitled to more money. He's certainly entitled to be the highest paid player at his position based on how he played. But at the end of the day, players want to feel respected, and the way you respect them is through giving them some form of involvement and also money.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Rodgers, speaking of the money, $42 million in 2022, $59.5 million in 2023, then $49.3 million in 2024. By the end of this three-year extension, he will be 41 years old. And I guess the Green Bay Packers can figure out what they want to do with Rodgers at that point. But hey, we've seen Tom Brady at age 45 playing, so maybe Rodgers wants to do the same. But now that Rodgers has signed, you talked about the money, but the control aspect of this, do you think that he's going to be included in some of these personnel decisions? Because that seems to be kind of what kicked this whole thing off with the Jordan Love draft pick a couple years ago.
I think he should be. I think any smart team is going to want to include the guy. You know, you're going to want to say, hey, what do you think about this player? Now, obviously, he had to be aware of Davante Adams leaving and going to the Raiders. He knew that was going to happen, and he knew it before he signed his extension. So as much as he understood and probably wanted Adams on the team, he knows that there's got to be another player that come through. But I think you got to keep him involved. I think it's going to be a fascinating season, you know, for what Green Bay. They have the two number ones. They have the Raiders' first-round pick. Will they draft a receiver in the first round? You got to be convinced that that's what they're going to do. You got to feel like that's what they're going to do. Because I think what we often kind of overlook a little bit is how many number one receivers there really are in the National Football League. They're not as many as the media lets us out to think. You know, there's certainly Tyreek Hill's the number one receiver. You guys that can change and tilt the field. But for the most part, there's a lot of guys that are number twos that play like number ones. Adams is the number one. There's no question. So how to find a way to replace the number one receiver on the team? But we've seen Rodgers make guys better. Lazard, Valdez, Scanling. I mean, he makes guys look better than they really are. That's the mark of a great player.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated to see what this Packers offense looks like with Davante Adams now in Las Vegas. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, like you mentioned, he's in Kansas City now. So the Packers, they got a little bit of work to do. Big Daddy, he knows that his team has a little bit of work to do here in terms of that offense. Real quick, what do you think happens with Jordan Love?
I think they sit there. I think some team has to kind of make an offer. I think we'll hear about it by May that somebody on draft day offered a third or a fourth round pick for Love, and the Packers either turned it down or they took it. I think there's no way that they should not have some kind of way to improve themselves. I mean, they could trade for Garoppolo or they could trade for Baker Mayfield and have the heir apparent. Not that they would do that, but I mean, unless they really believe Love is the guy, which I can't imagine they do.
Yeah.
That they need to find somebody that's behind Rodgers that can play and affect the game.
Yeah, no, money talks, and we have a show at VSiN called Follow the Money, and if you follow the money here with the Green Bay Packers, that decision to give Aaron Rodgers $150 million over 3 years probably tells you exactly what they think about Jordan Love, who I thought that was a disaster draft pick, in my opinion there. I didn't see why they did it, not only because it didn't help their team immediately, but it also pissed off their MVP quarterback there in Aaron Rodgers, but it appears that they've been able to patch things up. Tom Brady has patched things up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, though it wasn't really contentious there. He just retired for about 40 days. And Brady last year, age 44 season, played at an elite level, which is still even remarkable just to say out loud. 43 touchdowns, 5,300 passing yards, 13-4. The Buccaneers were. They fell short in the playoffs, losing to the eventual champion LA Rams at home. But now that Brady's back in the fold, we discussed a little bit about the retirement, how that kind of came to be, and then how he unretired. With Brady back in the fold, are the Bucs the clear favorite to win the NFC with Big Daddy worried about his Green Bay Packers?
I mean, I think they certainly are. I mean, you know, they still have some work to do, especially on the defensive front. You know, they've got to get Sue back if they can get him back. They've got to be able to get Gronk back. They've got to get Jason Pierre-Paul back. They haven't signed those guys back. But they have done a great job. Jason Light has done a good job of fixing this offensive line, of getting it to where losing Marpet, who retired, and then Kappa, who was a free agent, and then they re-signed Jensen back. So they've been able to repair the line. They get Shaq Mason, somebody that Brady was familiar with. We drafted him in the fourth round when I was in New England. Mm-hmm. You know, so they've kind of solidified the most important element for Brady. And then with Evans and Godwin, assuming he gets healthy, they sign Russell Cage. I think they're going to be good at receiver. They'll get Gronk back. We know this. Yeah. And I think the question marks is on defense. Where are they going to be on defense? And right now that remains to be seen. They've got to get those two defensive ends back. But with Vita Vea in there and the young kid that they drafted from Washington last year, mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're coming along. I think they really are. I think they're a good defensive team that still needs that element of big players inside. How good will they be in the secondary? I think Logan Ryan, you know, playing safety for them will help them. I thought Whitehead was a good player, but they got a cheaper player to come back and replace him. So we'll see how it all works out. But I mean, I don't see how. Look, the Atlanta. Let's just say this right now. I mean, we talk betting all the Atlanta's going to be whatever. They're going to not be very good. I mean, you know, we know they're not very good. Carolina has to improve. I think that's important. I think they will improve, you know. And then where's New Orleans with their situation? How do the Bucs not win 11 or 12 games based on the division they play in?
Yeah, no, that's exactly where my mind went when Brady returned. I was like, this division, barring any sort of Deshaun Watson trade, and for a second there, it looked like he might go to Atlanta or New Orleans. We'll get to Watson in a little bit here. But the fact that none of those teams were able to acquire him, the path is so crystal clear for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to repeat as division champions. Their win total at DraftKings, just for a little bit of context, 11.5. And that's probably the right number there, with that division being arguably the worst in the NFL outside of that top team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. One that's near and dear to my heart here, because I used to work in Seattle as a local sports anchor, is Russell Wilson being traded to the Denver Broncos. We've been hearing about these Russell Wilson rumors for about a year now, ever since he came out with the pseudo list of not asking for a trade, but if I were to be traded, here's where I would want you to trade me. And then finally, moments after Aaron Rodgers re-signed with the Green Bay Packers, the deal gets done, sending Russell Wilson to the Rocky Mountains. The Seahawks acquire a 2022 and 2023 first-round pick, a 23 second-round pick, 2022 fifth-round pick. Oh, by the way, quarterback Drew Lock, tight end Noah Fant, and defensive end Shelby Harrison. In return, the Broncos get Wilson in a 2022 fourth-round selection here. But do you like this fit here in Denver for Mr. Unlimited teaming up with Nathaniel Hackett as a first-year head coach?
You know, I wrote about it on VSiN.com about how, you know, let Russ cook. And there was one time when Russ was cooking at the French Laundry in Yountville. And last year, I thought he was a line cook at a diner. I mean, I thought he was up here at Ponzio's Diner in Philadelphia. I mean, it wasn't the same Russ. I mean, let's just be clear. Mm-hmm. You've seen Russ play. I mean, you know, the thing that's striking about what Russ wasn't doing last year was running. I mean, he ran for 183 yards the whole season. I mean, that's not who Russ is. I mean, you know, he's got to be able to move with his feet. He's an undersized quarterback. He's got to make plays with his feet. He only had 17 first downs rushing last year. You know, he's got to make plays running the football. So I think that's got to come back. I think Nathaniel Hackett has to get that back. I think at some point Seattle just said, we're tired of the diva. We're tired of dealing with this every single day. We need to move on. And they did. I mean, they're kidding themselves and thinking Drew Lock. I mean, you're a Seattle fan. You think Drew Lock? I mean, how would you go to bed at night thinking Drew Lock's your quarterback?
I wouldn't sleep very good. I can tell you that.
No.
Based on what I've seen from Drew Lock.
No, I don't think you would either. None of us would. I mean, except for Pete, maybe John Schneider will. I mean, maybe they're bluffing. I mean, they got to be. They seem like they have no interest at all in Baker. I'm told reliably that everybody thinks Baker could go to Carolina, he could go to Seattle. I'm told reliably that neither team is very interested in the player. Now, I think if they could get him where maybe Cleveland plays the salary and they get nothing, they don't have to, maybe they take him. I don't know. But to me, you know, the problems that Baker had in Cleveland are coming with him wherever he goes. He's going to get balls batted down. He's not going to see the receivers. But he's still better than Drew Lock, with all being said. So I don't know where this goes. But I'm optimistic for Denver because, as you know, they got a good team.
Yep.
They just didn't have a quarterback last year. And these receivers that Denver have, I think, are going to become even better with Russell. I think they really are. Sutton and, you know, Judy, and then, you know, the Hamler kid, they get him back and healthy. It's going to be dynamic.
Yeah, you talk about it being dynamic. And my question to you is, that do you think that Russell Wilson can get to that elite level? Because, I mean, in 10 seasons in Seattle, he won a ton of games, 104, 53, and one the regular season, 9-7 in the playoffs, won a Super Bowl, led them to another Super Bowl. They lost that one to New England. Can Wilson get back to that elite level? Because I think almost sometimes we forget that he was playing hurt last year and probably came back too soon from that finger injury.
Yeah, but even before he hurt the finger, he wasn't running. Like, he wasn't moving. And I think if you talk to people in the league, his athleticism, like all players except for Brady, starts to decline. And people were able to catch him. Defensive linemen were able to run him down. He wasn't able to escape. He didn't have that elusiveness that we've all seen Russ cook with. And losing that ingredient in his cooking repertoire and not having that attached to his apron made him a vulnerable player last year. He's got to get that back. He's got to have a great offseason. And I think that with Nathaniel Hackett as the head coach and play caller, certainly he's going to be more in tune.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Russell Wilson now get traded. The Seahawks, one of the reasons why they wanted to send him to Denver is that I don't think they felt too comfortable giving him another extension. Real quick, what do you think that extension looks like here for Denver? Is it another one of these NBA-type contracts that Watson just got from Cleveland?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. It's going to be 90% buttoned up guaranteed. I mean, this is eventually it's going to come out. He's got a new contract. It may be today. It may be tomorrow. Maybe right before the draft. But he's going to get a new deal. I mean, there's no denying it. And when you look at the teams, when you look at Denver and you see what they've been able to accomplish this offseason, I mean, getting Galloway now, he's going to have surgery. But Denver's got cap room. I mean, Denver's got the ability to make some to do some things. So, you know, right now Russell counts $19 million on their cap. He's got a $5 million roster bonus, so his cap number is $24 million. That's going to be an easy contract to lower his cap number and give him a boatload of money.
Yeah, if anything for Denver, this puts them in the mix among the contenders out there in that arms race of the AFC that we discussed earlier. On the Seattle side, we talked about this divorce kind of brewing for about 12 months now with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks front office and Pete Carroll, the head coach there. What do you think is next for them at quarterback? Because Baker Mayfield, you said that it doesn't sound like there's any interest, at least maybe to trade for him. We'll see if Mayfield gets released. Maybe they'd want to look at him then. But what do you think is next for Seattle at QB? Do they go through the draft in a draft that doesn't appear to have that franchise guy?
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody has these three quarterbacks going in the first round. I don't see it. You know, I really don't. And here's why I don't see it. Because whatever you do in a draft, and all we talk about during drafts are, this guy's a first rounder, this guy's not a first rounder, but nobody describes what a first rounder looks like. And so when you add a description next to the player, that's got to match, right? So can you honestly say that Malik Willis is a starter and a top 10 player in the National Football League in due time? You can't say that. And if you can't say that, how do you draft him in the first round? You can't. You could say he's a potential starter. Mm-hmm. That makes him a second or a third rounder. You know, you say Kenny Pickett is a bona fide starter and a top 10 player at his position in the league? You can't say that. Matt Corral's got skill, but you can't say that either. So I don't see how anybody can justify, well, that, you know, they say Carolina has three first-round grades on quarterbacks this draft. There's no chance that's true. There's no chance that's fucking true. There's no way. You can't match the verbiage.
Yeah. No.
So when you draft, it's like Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh signs Trubisky. They still need a quarterback. You draft, if say Carolina drafts Willis in the first, they still need a quarterback. Willis isn't going to play next year. He's not going to play. They say you draft Pickett. Is he going to play? No, of course he's not going to play next year. You're drafting for a future. And do you really think this guy, and you don't think somebody coming down the road is going to be better than him? I mean, to me, it's all about the moment. You have to think past the moment.
Yeah, no, that's the fascinating dynamic here with this draft coming up here. We're going to have a lot of time to talk about the draft. We're about a month away. It's in Las Vegas. It's going to be a fun time here with the NFL, with these quarterbacks not really being the headliners. It's not a lot like what we saw in 2021, I should say, with five quarterbacks going in the first 15 picks. One of the reasons why we saw urgency in this whole free agency and quarterback carousel was because of the quarterbacks in the draft. And that kind of urged the Cleveland Browns to not really do the unthinkable, because it makes sense from a football standpoint, but the Browns trading for Deshaun Watson, and this was a massive deal. They gave three first-round picks over to the Houston Texans, 2022, 23, and 24, a 23 third-round pick, 2022 and 2024 fourth-round picks in exchange for Watson, and a sixth-round pick. And oh, and by the way, they signed him to a five-year, $230 million contract that is fully guaranteed. Watson, it's a messy timeline for him, because he originally asked for that trade from the Texans after the 2020 season, and then all hell broke loose, Michael. He ended up being accused by nearly two dozen massage therapists for allegedly sexually assaulting them, currently facing 22 civil suits, but will not face criminal charges according to two different counties. Watson still could face suspension, though, from the NFL. This week at the owners' meeting, Roger Goodell said, quote, there's no timetable on a suspension for Deshaun Watson, and they'll, quote, seek to get to the bottom of the facts. So I ask you, with knowing all of that, Michael, how does a trade like this happen just days after Watson and the teams found that he wouldn't be criminally charged?
Well, I think that was the trigger, right? And then it went to another grand jury, and he wasn't charged in that grand jury. So that triggered it. I mean, there's so much about this we don't know, and I'm not defending Watson at all here. You can't get 22 people to agree on a flavor of ice cream, let alone agree to file a suit. So there's obviously something here, and I'm not dismissing it. It's really important. It's certainly going to affect any team that was engaged in a conversation with Watson, and now it's going to affect the Browns. But to me, this is again with the money deal. Again with the money. I mean, originally he told the Browns he was out. Mm-hmm. And then at his press conference, he said, you know, he didn't really know that. Clearly what happened was the Browns came back to the agent, and who was all about the money, again with the money. He was all about the money. And he, you know, and they said, and they basically put a deal in front of the Browns and said, if you do this deal, he'll be back in. And they did it. I mean, they did it. And look, it's the first, Femi, it's the first NBA deal that has ever occurred in the National Football League. What fans don't understand is, in the 1960s, when Pete Rozelle was the commissioner and the league was teetering on, financial instability, there was the AFL was rising. And so what they didn't want owners to do is to guarantee contracts without having the money in an escrow account. So they installed this law, this rule called the funding rule. So what they do is every March they take a picture of your future contracts. They take a snapshot of it. And if any contract has skill and injury guaranteed in the following year, you then have to send the present value of that money to the league office and place it in an escrow account, okay? Mm-hmm. So why would you do that? Like, why would you take, in this case, let's say $138 million, Jimmy Haslam has to write a check for whatever the present value of that money would be today coming out, say $100 million, he's got to write a check out of his cash account to sit in some escrow account, not earning any money, not being with a hedge fund, making, 20% on the dollar. So the team said, we don't want to do that. And they used this rule to keep guaranteed contracts from really inking into the NFL. We still had guarantees for skill. We still had guarantees for injury, but we didn't really have them for both. So unless it was tied to both, there was no way that you didn't have to fund the money. This broke that rule. And of the all players to allow to break the rule, Steve Bisciotti said this yesterday. I mean, it's really, to me, it's the worst thing for the league to allow this to happen, especially with somebody who, whose character is in question based on these 22 civil cases, to allow him to then be rewarded with the first ever all guaranteed contract. But the whole reason he's a Brown is because of the contract.
Yeah, no, I think we sometimes overuse the phrase bad look, but I think it applies here. It's just not really the best look for Watson to be that face of getting the first NBA-style contract, but he got the contract. And I guess the next question is that, do you think that this changes the quarterback market forever? Like, is this going to be the going rate for these QBs getting these fully guaranteed NBA-style contracts?
Well, Bisciotti said yesterday that he, you know, it's not going to affect him. He's going to try to do business as he normally wants to do within his own organization. It's going to be hard. You know, and look, you can make the case for, if you have a great quarterback, if you say you have Josh Allen, you say, look, Josh Allen's going to be our quarterback for the next 5 years. I don't have any problem guaranteeing that money. You really don't. I mean, that's not an issue. You know, you want to protect yourself if he gets injured, but you're going to owe him the money even if he gets injured. So I don't think as much on quarterbacks it'll be a problem, because you feel like he's going to play. You know, it's not really the issue. It could be an issue if it tries to get into rookie contracts. I mean, this contract's going to affect the rookie contracts, because the agents are going to want more of the rookie money guaranteed. They're not going to want to be able – that's always the fight, is how much of the guarantee you get, not the average per year, how much of the guarantee. That's always the fight, and I think that fight's going to continue.
Yeah, the sport of football, it's not for long, as they say, for the NFL, and getting as many guarantees as possible is probably advantageous for the players, might not be as advantageous for these organizations. So real quick, I mean, Andrew Berry was sitting up there at the press conference. It was Berry, the general manager. It was Kevin Stefanski, the head coach. Watson was in the middle there taking questions. And the Browns were talking about how they did due diligence on Deshaun Watson before making this deal. Do you buy what they're selling in terms of this team doing the due diligence? Or do you think that they were just desperate when they came to terms with the fact that Baker Mayfield wasn't their guy?
I know an Andrew Berry. I mean, I think he certainly did his due diligence as much as he can do, right? As much as he possibly can do without, you know, and maybe they hired a detective. Maybe they hired somebody to analyze whatever evidence they could get their hands on. You know, I think that every team probably had to do as much of that. I was told by somebody reliably that there's more to the story than meets the eye that'll come out later. We shall see. We shall see if that's actually true. I don't know if it's true. I'm just kind of passing along the information. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think that Cleveland, I think this the genesis of this deal started with the football people in Cleveland. I think it definitely did, which is so ironic, right? This analytical-based front office that passed on the draft pick on Deshaun Watson, they're the ones who traded the 12th pick to the Houston Texans, so Houston could pick Watson. They didn't think Watson was worthy of the pick. Remember that?
No, you know,
they didn't think
circle.
He was worthy. Come full circle.
Yeah, no, that's incredible how that has all come to be here. And we kind of came full circle for the Indianapolis Colts. They trade away their guy, Carson Wentz. They trade for Matt Ryan for the Atlanta Falcons. And I really want to get your thoughts on this one, because this was one of the more intriguing quarterback carousel moves that we saw, in my opinion. Falcons, they acquire only a 2022 third-round draft pick for Matt Ryan. With Matt Ryan now in the fold in Indianapolis, are the Colts the best team in the AFC South?
Well, I mean, look, I think the Colts still have a questionable on defense. I think they just hired John Fox, the former head coach of the Bears and the Broncos, you know, to come in and the Panthers to come in and help their defense. I think it's kind of actually a smart move bringing Fox in, because I think he'll help Gus Bradley diversify his schemes and give him a little bit more of a disguise, give him a little bit more of a different system and blitzes to play, to not just be in the Pete Carroll cover three system. So I think that's certainly going to help. I think what Ryan brings them is leadership. I think he gives them somebody that the players can gravitate to, that the players will like, that will play hard, that understands what it takes to be a professional, and won't God darn make mistakes and try to throw the ball left. Have you ever seen a quarterback throw the ball more left-handed than Carson Wentz did last year? Seriously, have you ever seen that?
Shoveling it to defensive linemen in the red zone. I mean, what he was – we'll get to Carson Wentz here in just a second and the Commanders and what that might mean for them. But Carson Wentz is the type of quarterback that I like to call a double agent. You never know who he's working for. Is he working for my team? Is he working for the opposition? What's going on here? And I agree with you in the fact that Matt Ryan brings a little bit of stability. And when that trade happened, I mean, I love the Colts now, because I think he's a clear upgrade over what they had in Carson Wentz. That roster, I think, is ready to go. You mentioned the question marks on defense. They traded for Yannick Ngakoue to try to shore up that pass rush there. But indoors, where Matt Ryan is most comfortable in a division that might not be the strongest, why can't the Colts be among the contenders and win that division?
Well, I mean, they're going to feed Jonathan Taylor, and he's going to get him in the good play. I still like, as much as I think that Frank Wright hasn't been able to really deliver on evaluating the quarterback, I think he coaches the quarterback really well. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll get him into a good scheme. And I do think they'll improve their defense. I mean, last year they were 19th in the National Football League in third down defense. They were hard, they weren't very good on fourth down. They gave up 61% of the fourth down conversions. They couldn't hold a lead. Where they were great on defense was they were tremendous in turning the ball over, which is a great stat. But as John Madden once said, it becomes a deodorant for the problems that you have with your team.
Yeah.
And it covered up a lot of their sins defensively, which was their scheme. And now that Eberflus is in Chicago, that scheme's going to have to transcend itself and see if it can hold up. I think the Fox addition to go along with Bradley, especially in the red zone, I think will help them. And with Ryan giving them stability, they need a big-time receiver. I mean, Paris Campbell's got to come through. Michael Pittman's got to keep getting better. You know, they've got to continue to grow at receiver. But as long as they got that big guy in the backfield and that offensive line, people say, well, the left tackle. Well, if you watch Matt Pryor play last year, the kid they traded for from Philadelphia, big man, they got his weight down, he got in shape. I think he can hold the fort at left tackle, and that line's good if he does.
Yeah, Matt Ryan's going to turn 37 in May, but we forget that he was a regular season MVP in 2016, taking that Falcons team to the Super Bowl. So the Colts have Matt Ryan because they traded Carson Wentz after one season to the Washington Commanders. They get two third-round picks in return after trading a first-round pick to the Philadelphia Eagles to get Carson Wentz. And there's also a pick swap for the second-round picks, I believe, as well in this deal. But now it's interesting. This is the third team in 3 years for Carson Wentz, the former second overall pick in that 2016 draft. And to me, it's just another year and another time we're hearing that Wentz's former team not saying some not so nice things about him on his way out. I don't know if you caught this at the owners meeting yesterday, but Jim Irsay said this, quote, "It's just for us. It was something that we had to move away from as a franchise. It was very obvious." Like, they didn't even say him by name. It was something we had to move away from. Your thoughts hearing how Irsay was describing Wentz, and if you're Washington, how does that make you feel?
Well, you know, on the show, on my show, on Lombardi Line, I always talk about Carson Wentz being the Ricky Fowler of the NFL, you know, and on the shuffle, I do too. I mean, because, you know, he'll play good when it doesn't matter, but when it really matters, he chokes and throws the ball left-handed, and I think that's what Irsay's really saw. Plus, he doesn't endear himself to his teammates.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's pretty clear. You know, there's no really – he's not a guy that the teammates seem to like or gravitate towards. There's a distance, and if your team doesn't develop the personality of the quarterback, it's very challenging. And they didn't have any personality last year, the Colts. So I admire the Colts for admitting they made a mistake. I mean, most teams would have tried to hold on to them and manufacture them. They didn't. My question to you is, if I named you the president of the Washington Commanders, who was your competition to get Wentz? Like, who were you competing with to get this guy? Like, why did you have to give up anything to get him?
No clue.
They weren't going to pay him the roster bonus. They weren't paying it. Where were you going? Like, where are we going? Like, it's the worst thing ever to need a quarterback when you to trade for somebody and still need the position. Like, where are we going with this guy?
Yeah. Now, it made no sense, especially when you saw the moves after they made that trade. Now, I know they tried to get in on Russell Wilson. Sounds like he didn't want to go there. He would not have waived his no trade clause. So you strike out with Russell Wilson, but maybe a sign. I would rather have signed Jameis Winston or one of these other guys, maybe wait for Baker Mayfield or something to where you're not giving up actual key assets to get a quarterback, because Wentz is not a quarterback that I think in this juncture of his career where you should be giving up any assets for. It should be, if you want him, you signed him as a free agent. But if you're trading for him, I think that's just bad news there as an organization.
Yeah, I mean, and then they redid his contract. They guaranteed his salary. They got his roster. His cap number goes up. I mean, you know, next year he makes $20 million, and the year after he makes $21 million. It's not a lot of money for a quarterback, but it's still like seriously? Like, I don't know why Washington thinks they can change a guy that two teams said they couldn't change. And then the other team that's getting rid of him is vocal. I get taking him on. I mean, like, look, I'm not a Mitchell Trubisky fan at all, but I get Pittsburgh trying to take him on, think they can rehabilitate him. I don't think it can happen, but I get it.
Yeah.
But like I get if they would have signed, if Wentz would have been on the free agent and you bring him in, okay, I get that. We're going to try to rebuild. But to give up assets, like, who are we competing against? Like, who was our competition? Like, who do we have to beat? Garoppolo's still out there. Baker Mayfield, you could have him. Wouldn't you rather have both those guys than Carson Wentz? I would. And I don't even like Mayfield, but I'd rather have him than Wentz.
100% agreement. The biggest indictment, in my opinion, Frank Reich, the guy who loves Carson Wentz, was able to let him go out the door after one season. That, to me, you can't sign off on that guy. But these quarterback, the carousel, we could talk about this for hours, Michael, but we got to get to the receiver. So let's take a quick break and we'll discuss these pass catchers who are on the move in 2022. Michael, how about these pass catchers here in this 2022 NFL offseason? Biggest one being Davante Adams, in my opinion, the best receiver in football, traded from the Green Bay Packers to the Las Vegas Raiders for a first and second round pick. Adams then gets the five-year, $141 million contract, becoming the highest paid receiver in league history for about a week. Because then later on, Tyreek Hill comes at an impasse in his contract talks with the Kansas City Chiefs. So the Chiefs trade him to the Miami Dolphins for a first, second, and fourth round pick in this year's draft, and a fourth and sixth round pick in next year's draft. Hill then inks a four-year, $120 million contract, $72 million guaranteed, total money of $120 million in new money. And then to start off the offseason, my beloved Dallas Cowboys, they go ahead and trade Amari Cooper to the Cleveland Browns for just a fifth-round pick and a sixth-round pick swap. But when you talk about this wide receiver landscape, Adams and Hill being the biggest ones, what really stood out to you as the best move among these teams?
You know, I mean, I love the Tyreek Hill move for Miami because they got a quarterback who can't throw the ball deep and relies on yards after the catch. And for all the virtues that Tyreek Hill has in terms of getting deep and down the field, he's still a dynamic yards after the field receiver. I mean, mm-hmm. it's hard to tackle. I mean, remember, this is a kid that played running back at Oklahoma State. You get the ball in this guy's hand, he's not a small receiver. I think it fits. As much as I go back over it, you know, and the criticism that a lot of people extolled about, you know, Tua doesn't throw the ball down the field, which he doesn't, and he's not accurate. But the one thing, you know, short passes to this kid, to Hill, is dynamic. And with their receiving core, with Gillespie inside, I think it really becomes dynamic. I love Adams. He gives them what Adams does for the Raiders, fam, is it makes them have a legitimate outside receiver. I mean, Hunter Renfrow is not an outside receiver, but he's a really good inside receiver. So instead of playing outside, he can move inside permanently, and then it allows Waller to control the inside part of the field. So they're dynamic. They've got really, when you break the Raider offense down, they've got a top five receiver on the outside. They have a top five slot receiver, and they have a top five tight end. They could have a top three in all those positions. I mean, that's pretty dynamic. And with McDaniels running the offense and installing it, I think it'll be really effective. So I love those two moves. I'm not in love with – I think Dallas did the right thing getting rid of Amari Cooper. Too much money to be paid for a guy that disappears at times in games. So I wasn't really in love with that. I mean, maybe he'll be better for Cleveland, particularly that he's not going to be the feature of Cleveland. I mean, it's going to be Nick Chubb running the ball. It's going to be Watson throwing it. I wouldn't be surprised if they signed Will Fuller in Cleveland and throw him the ball, because Will Fuller and Deshaun had a great kind of a combination going, if Fuller could ever stay healthy on the field. So I like those two moves the best.
Yeah, that's the thing with Will Fuller. They're staying healthy. I believe he played two games for the Miami Dolphins last year on a one-year contract. He's still a free agent. We'll see where he ends up here. But the Tyreek Hill move, to me, is really fascinating for this Dolphins team, because you mentioned the fit with Tua, that if he gets the ball out of his hands quickly, he can find Hill. Mike McDaniel at the owners' meeting said that they're going to use him in a similar fashion to the way that he used Debo Samuel with the San Francisco 49ers. So imagine Tyreek Hill running these jet sweeps, getting him in motion, getting the defense to move around there. I mean, he's not as physical as a Debo Samuel, but that speed is as fast as anybody in the league.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's dynamic. And he's a little bit like, one thing about Tyreek Hill, you know, I'm writing this book about the Hall of Fame, and I'm ranking every player from 1 to 100. And I was just, the other day, I was writing Lenny Moore. And Lenny Moore played wide receiver for the great Baltimore Colts with Johnny Unitas. But he played receiver and running back. He wasn't like Debo Samuel, who would line up at running back and run. He was truly like a wide receiver that played receiver on some downs. He played running back on some downs. He was a dual position player. Because remember, back in that days, everybody was in two back sets, two receivers, and a tight end. Nobody changed. But the versatility of Moore made it very complicated for the team. It's the same thing with Tyreek Hill. I mean, I often wondered, you know, there were times where I thought Andy Reid should have put Tyreek Hill in the backfield and try to deal with him, because you can't double him when he's back there. There's no way you can get two people on him. He's just a unique player that, as Al Davis says, tilts the field.
Do you think Tua can be better with the offensive line? Because I guess the theory of the people who are the Tua believers, and I probably fit somewhere in the middle between people who don't believe and who actually do believe, But the offensive line was one of the worst pass-protecting offensive lines in the NFL. They signed Teron Armstead now. They signed Connor Williams for the Dallas Cowboys there. If he can cut down on the penalties, he can be a serviceable guard. But what do you think about Tua if he's able to be protected? Can he get back to that guy that went top five in the draft there?
When you watch Connor, as a Cowboy fan, you watch Connor Williams, he couldn't block anybody at the 49er game. He got destroyed in that game. He got killed. So I'm not sure about how he's going to help. And then Armstead can't stay healthy. I mean, Armstead's a middle reliever now. He's going to play 10 games. That's about it. So they got to try to find a way to get him through the season at 17 games. I don't think that'll happen. But Tua's got to get pressure. If you pressure Tua inside and force him to have to move right or left, he's not fast. You can catch him. And he can't drive the ball unless he's got a clean pocket. The ball's got to come out of his hand very quickly. And I thought the Miami Dolphins did a great job last year of making that happen. Now, they're going to have to do it again. With these skill players, it's hard to walk up to Tyreek Hill and play press coverage without some help on top. You're going to have to do something with them.
Yeah, they have Tua there. They have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle entering his second year at wide receiver. Mike Gesicki, you outlined. Devontae Parker still on the roster, although there's some whispers that maybe he gets traded to some other team there possibly. We'll see what happens with him. Amari Cooper, you mentioned how you thought it was a good move for Dallas to trade him to Cleveland. And as a Cowboy fan, my only worry and pushback would be this. And the splits with Cooper on the field and off the field weren't so pretty for Dak Prescott. In 2021, Prescott with Cooper, a passer rating of 108, without Amari Cooper on the field, 83.1. Should I be concerned about this Dallas passing offense now that Cooper's in Cleveland?
Well, I think Cooper's a talented player. I just don't think he shows up all the time, and I think he kind of disappears. I don't know how much of the love of the game, but he is talented, and so those numbers kind of can indicate his true talent, but they're going to have to get it from somebody else. I mean, I think the pressure's going to be on CeeDee Lamb. I think he's going to have to take, and I think he can take a giant step up. Gallup, they're going to bring back. Look, it's going to be hard for the Cowboys to repeat. Particularly, I don't think they've improved their offensive line, which became the problem for them in that game against San Francisco.
Yeah, Dallas, we'll see what they end up doing. Still the favorite to win the NFC East, but they're clinging to that, in my opinion. You talked about the pressure on CeeDee Lamb, but there's been a lot of pressure on some of these contenders to sign some edge rushers. And we saw the edge rusher market active early on in free agency when the new league year began, starting with the Buffalo Bills signing a 33-year-old Von Miller to a six-year, $120 million contract. $51 million guaranteed, $45 fully guaranteed at signing. This feels unprecedented for a player of Von Miller's age. And I ask you, is Von Miller the missing piece for the Buffalo Bills in terms of making a Super Bowl run?
They better hope so. I mean, this contract shocked me. I didn't see this one coming. I watched Von Miller. I thought he played better in the playoffs than he did any time in Denver. I thought he was
saving it up.
The end. Maybe he was. Maybe he was saving it up. But, I mean, I would feel like – look, one thing we know, Buffalo struggled to rush the passer last year. And if they're going to play from in front like we think they will with this offense behind Josh Allen, they're going to need somebody to be dynamic. I just didn't see it. This was one of the deals to me that has the potential for the highest risk of failure.
Yeah, Von Miller signing that deal, but it's kind of like a three-year deal when you actually look at the contract, because his cap hit is only $7.4 million in 2025. So we saw Miller go to the Buffalo Bills. Chandler Jones signs a three-year $52 million deal with the Raiders. Khalil Mack, he gets traded from the Bears to the LA Chargers. Bears getting a second-round pick this year and a sixth-round pick in 2023. Which of these signings, of these edge rushers, when you talk about Miller, Jones, and Mack, do you think is the best one and can have the most impact in 2022?
Well, I think a lot of this is tied to, are they healthy? I mean, is Khalil Mack healthy? I think that's going to be the key thing. I mean, they redid his deal. They kind of lowered his cap number. They kind of split some of the money up. And so, you know, they kind of got him. He's 31 years old. He did not look healthy last year. He did not have the same impact that he did. I think this is really a one-year deal for them. I really do. He's going to have to show that he can really take a bounce back and really move forward. So, I wasn't in love. I thought Chandler Jones was really good last year. I think he was still rushing the passer at a really high level, controlling the game. I really liked him, but I thought he was healthy, whereas I didn't think Mack was healthy, and I thought Miller was at the end. So I would rank it Chandler Jones, Mack, with a caveat, because he might be, you know, he wasn't 100%. And at age 31, can he get it back? Can he feel like he's got the juice back in his legs? I think the Chargers hope so. You put him on the other side of Bosa, it's going to be a hard thing to block now.
Yeah, and I think that's why I think I would rank Mac number one, in my opinion, just because I think pairing him with Bosa, now Mac is going to be able to be that secondary rusher for the first time in his career. I like Von Miller going to Buffalo, but Von Miller at 33 being the primary rusher, I don't know how much juice he has in the tank to be able to dial it back to that Denver caliber. In LA, he was able to be kind of the secondary guy with Aaron Donald and the Miller, but Chandler Jones as well paired up with Max Crosby, that is going to be a significant duo. But what the Chargers can do with Mac and Bosa up front and what they can do on the back end, signing JC Jackson and now Derwin James back there at safety as well, I think that defense with Brandon Staley, they have a chance to be really, really good. But Michael, at the owners meeting, one of the big things that we saw earlier this week is that the overtime rules have changed. Now, this was a big deal in the playoffs with the Kansas City Chiefs defeating the Buffalo Bills in that overtime game. A lot of fans felt cheated that we didn't get to see Josh Allen. I know our producer, Stephen Bond, big-time Buffalo Bills fan, Bills Mafia. He was disgusted by the Bills not being able to get a chance to respond in OT, but the competition committee approved the change of the overtime rules for the playoffs only. That's the big caveat. But here are the rules, Michael. Both teams have the opportunity to possess the ball in OT. If the score is tied after each team has possessed the ball, the next score wins. If the team kicking off to start the overtime period scores a safety on the receiving team's initial possession, the team that kicked off is the winner of the game. Now that we have that all on the table, what do you think of these overtime rules, and was it necessary to make this change?
I didn't like it. I look, if Stevens Bond's team could have handled the 13 seconds in the game, he wouldn't be complaining. You know, I mean, it goes back to that. You know, Cincinnati, the Bengals, who went to the Super Bowl and was, you know, 2 minutes away from maybe winning the game, you know, if they would have called false start on that play, you know, maybe Kupp doesn't get the pass interference call and it's third and 14 from the 14, you know, they might win the Super Bowl. They had no problem with the overtime rules. I mean, Mahomes threw three of the worst passes. One of them went to the Bengals and they got the game. So I think it's a complete overreaction. I think it's typical what the NFL does is they're listening to, you know, people that are complaining. It got passed. It voted passed only because I think they wanted it to make it fair in overtime, make it fair in postseason to at least see this. But look, the Chiefs, you know, when they won the game in overtime, it benefited them. You know, it didn't benefit them when the Patriots won it. So, I mean, look, I here's what I say, fam. We're talking about player safety, and now we're talking about extending the game longer with player, you know, like it doesn't make any sense. We're 17 games now. We want overtime to be longer. Whatever, you know, we talk player safety when it's convenient. I think we should have just left the rules the same. I had no problem with it.
Yeah, no, I really didn't have any problems with the rules as well for the overtime, just because I felt that defense is still a part of the game, so you shouldn't be guaranteed another possession if you can't get that stop. Now, here's what I proposed on Twitter earlier when I saw the rule get changed, and I want to get your thoughts to see if you would agree with this. I propose that they keep the overtime rules the same, but you automatically give the football to the home team in the playoffs. So get rid of the coin toss, and going into the game, you know that if we go to OT, the home team gets the ball first. What are your thoughts on that?
So the home team gets the ball first, so the crowd's going to be absolutely insane. It's going to make it really hard for the defense. I think it gives the home team a really a distinct advantage, because at that point, everybody's drunk. You know, everybody's probably peeing in their seats. They don't want to leave their seats, you know, and it's going to be really hard for – and now we don't know – you know, I get where your point is. You don't want the coin toss to determine it, but I got to feel like if you're the home team, you should give the visiting team the ball first, because – you know, to me, that's a hard one. I kind of like it. Certainly favors the home team when they get it first, because now all of a sudden they determine what you have to do based on what they did.
Well, here's my thought process behind it, is that I think it puts an emphasis on winning your division, because winning the division means you get the home playoff game, puts an emphasis on having a better record in the regular season. Let's say you get home field advantage, you get that number one seed, you know you have that caveat in your back pocket here, and it also adds the element of strategy. At the end of regulation, let's say it's 30 seconds left and you're the road team, you score a touchdown and it's a one-point game. Do you kick the extra point and rely on your defense in overtime, or do you try to go for two to win the game there? I think that it's knowing in advance that the home team gets the ball, I think it makes it a little bit more fair than relying on the coin flip, which is a 50-50 proposition, and nobody knows which way the wind is going to blow.
Yeah, I give it to you. And then, you know, of course, if you get the home team, then the visiting team gets the ball first. They get to pick the wind direction, which is, yep, if it's in bad weather, you got a better chance.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, Commissioner Femi, I'll give you that one. I'll let you have that one.
There we go. I should have called the competition committee. Get me on the phone with those guys. We'll get this thing sorted out for the playoffs. Let's take another quick break. But on the other side, let's talk a little awards here, Michael. I know it's a staple of the GM Shuffle podcast, and we'll get to it here in just a bit. All right, Michael, we've reached the point that everybody is waiting for here. It is time to give out some awards with the GM Shuffle podcast here. And you want to start with On the Lamb.
Yeah, I think you got to put the Falcons on the Lamb. I mean, look, Mariota was the first pick overall in the draft, but, you know, they trade Matt Ryan. They kind of put their toe in the water on Deshaun Watson. Actually, put more than their toe in. They put their swim trunks in there. They dove right in, you know. And I just don't think they're a very talented team with very little depth. And now they have a questionable quarterback. Felipe Franks is the only backup. You love Felipe Franks, fam. I mean, come on.
College football, SEC days.
I mean, if he could run the option, it'd be great. But I think, to me, they got to go on the Lamb based on their offseason.
I complete agreement. I mean, another team that's a bird mascot could go on the Lamb as well, the Seattle Seahawks, with what's been going on there. I mean, they're going to be absolutely irrelevant coming up here in this 2022 season. So that's a team that I would look out for to be on the Lamb, with the quarterback situation being what it is in the Pacific Northwest. The Fred Palermo Award, Best Game Plan of the Week, which there's no game, so this could be coming to the GM or so for the best moves of the offseason.
I think there's a lot of guys who have done a lot of good things with their decision-making, building their team as they go through this offseason and, and trying to solve the fundamental problem of fixing their quarterback. And on the surface right now, you know, I think the guy who's done the best job so far, with some hesitation, is George Payton of Denver. I think he's done a really nice job of building his team, adding a pass rusher. And if Russell Wilson comes back to being the cook at the French Laundry and not a line cook at a diner, this is going to be a hell of a move.
How about your guy, TB12, Tom Brady? He's not the general manager, but the fact that it all parted for him with everything going on in the NFC South with all the other teams, he comes back here, instant contender for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So maybe TB12, Bruce Arians, the head coach, Jason Light, the GM, they're all the Fred Palermo Award of the Week because they look like they got a clear path in the NFC South. And last but not least, if you don't know, now you know.
Well, you know, I was going to say Brady for that, but I mean, now you know that I'll tell you what I think is pretty clear is the AFC has eight teams that I think can compete for a Super Bowl. I think you got eight teams in the AFC. If you didn't know it, now you know it. They got eight teams that can compete. I mean, really, when you break it down, Buffalo can compete. I don't know if you could say Miami or New England is a Super Bowl team. They're certainly playoff contenders. I mean, Cincinnati, Cleveland can compete. That's three. Indianapolis can compete, that's four. And then I think every team in the West can, and that's eight. There's eight teams, and I'm not even mentioning some of – and I didn't mention the Tennessee Titans, which would be nine.
Yeah, they were the number one seed last year.
Number one seed. So, like, if you got some money to sprinkle around on a future bet on who's going to be representing the AFC, good luck picking it out. And you don't have Joe Lunardi to set the brackets for you. Think about that.
No bracketology there for the NFL. We're just going to play it and decide it on the field and leave the committees to the college sports here. But for me, if you don't know, now you know. I hate to pile on the guy, but Carson Wentz, addition by subtraction for the Indianapolis Colts there. Now that Matt Ryan's in the fold, Colts serious contenders as opposed to last year where they looked like it. But when you got a double agent at quarterback, you're never actually a serious contender. Pop culture minute is a popular thing to do here on the GM Shuffle. We might need to turn this into Sopranos in 60 seconds here with what's coming up this offseason.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you can always equate the Godfather 50 years. You can equate something that happens during the NFL season to the Godfather and certainly the Sopranos. But I have told you before we agreed to do this pod together, you had to brush up on the Sopranos.
Yes, sir.
And much like, do you ever see the movie Diner? In the movie Diner, before the guy will marry the girl, she's got to study like the Baltimore Colts history and she's got to pass a test to be able to be his bride, you know, and she's down there studying. So I'm going to issue a question every now and then on the Sopranos.
Yep.
In season one, Uncle Junior's at a funeral for a woman that he used to mess around with. I won't go into specifics in what they did. And he has a question. He's wondering, why doesn't mass cards have the same effect as baseball cards? Do you know what his line was?
1,000 for Hannes Wagner, Jack Bleep for Jesus.
There you go. I love it.
That's
I love
it right there.
You're studying. I love it.
I'm getting my study going on. And throughout the course of the offseason, my goal, Michael, is by the time we get to kickoff for the 2022 season, I will have gone through the entire series of The Sopranos, and we will be lockstep come regular season.
I hope so. Well, I'll go back. I'll start watching it again, too, just to be with you.
Yeah, no, it's going to be an absolute fun time. And I'm not even sure what I'm going to be embarking on this journey, I should say. But can't wait to find
journey.
Out.
It yeah, is a jersey journey.
It's the Freudian slip right there. But that wraps up for the first episode of the pod, Michael. This was a lot of fun. We're going to be doing it, like we mentioned at the top of the show, every Thursday throughout the offseason. We got special stuff planned for draft week as well. We'll double up that week. That's going to be a lot of fun here in Las Vegas. But, Michael, first episode down. Many more to go, man. Can't wait.
Thanks. Thank you, Femi. Great job. Appreciate you. Thank you, everyone, for being patient and waiting. We appreciate it. Look forward to the future.
Yeah, thank all the loyal listeners of the GM Shuffle podcast. Thank you for your patience and hanging with us. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to VSiN. Thank you to Michael Lombardi for the whole reason why this is all possible. And thank you to our producer on the ones and twos, as always, Steven Bond. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review, and we'll talk to you next week.